Good morning, sunshine. Whew, I'm nervous as I don't know what, y'all. First, I'd like to thank my higher power for allowing me to be here this morning. But y'all get to see the sunshine, so I keep looking, the sunrise, and I got to keep looking back. So when I see the glow coming from your faces, I'll know to turn back and look. And did I say I was nervous? Okay. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I got here. But I'm going to tell you more about what I've been doing since I've been here. I came by way of Crownsville Mental Hospital this last time around. I got introduced to the fellowship probably about 1987. But that was it. I just got introduced to it. I'm a chronic relapser, y'all. But every time I relapsed and I went back out, I took something out there with me. And somebody told me that as long as I didn't give up, I still had a chance at this thing called recovery. And this last go around, which was October 26, 1997, I had lost the will to live. I was very angry. I was angry with y'all. I was angry with God. I was angry with my family. But most important of all, I was angry with myself. I couldn't understand why I couldn't stay clean. Mind you, I didn't take any suggestions. I was kind of running on my own self-will. One of the suggestions that you gave me was to stay out of a relationship, Gloria, in your first year of recovery. But I didn't think that applied to me because I know about relationships. You just got to show up. And if they do their part, we'd be all right. Needless to say, it brought me a lot of pain. And I'm a person that runs from pain. So I tried to commit suicide. And I had it all planned out, y'all. I was going to wait till everybody left that morning. My partner and my children, they were off to school. My partner was off to work. I had the pills lined up. I love dogs. And I barricaded myself in my room. And I proceeded to take these pills. But I need to let you know that my higher power has a sense of humor, because would you believe that everybody came home? My daughter wasn't feeling well. My partner forgot her lunch. And my other daughter came home for lunch. And when they tried to get in the room, they was asking me what was my problem. And I told them that I didn't have a problem. I was just trying to die. See, I was real angry because I felt like I was a failure at life. Everything that I had tried, I failed at. I could never complete nothing. I ran from everything. I lived my life in total fear. Fear was my motivator. Whew. So they proceeded to try to call the ambulance, but you know, I'm the type of person that likes to be in the background. I don't like all this center of attention, so I told them I didn't want to go in no ambulance. But see, I like to eat. So one of them suggested that we go get a bite to eat. And that sounded good. I was feeling kind of woozy to my stomach at that point. And I felt like some food would be pretty good. So I proceeded to put my shoes on. They said, don't worry about the shoes. Just come on, let's just get in the car. So I was like, all right, cool. So we get in the car. And I ended up at Annapolis, what was that, Annapolis Medical Center. And there were 6 cops waiting for me. And to make a long story short, they pretty much told me that either you come willingly or we will commit you. See, one of the pills that I took, they were worried that it was going to affect my heart. So they transported me to Crownsville Hospital, and I stayed there for 34 days. But I need to let you know that the first 2 weeks of those 34 days, I cried, I cursed. I was so angry. I felt so empty. It was like a void. It was like a hole. And something happened in the last 2 weeks that I was there. See, God sent me some angels, and they came in forms of nurses. And one of them fed me all the time. And the other one said something to me that was so, and I've heard this before, but for some reason that particular day, it just sounds so phenomenal. He said, you know the one thing that is so good about God? And I said, what? He said, all you have to do is to ask for forgiveness and it's done. Just like that. It's done. And I just sat there and I just stared at him. Because, see, in my mind, how could God forgive an addict like me? I stole, I lied, I cheated. I cursed him. He didn't want no part of me. But something kept egging me to just try it. I mean, what would it hurt? And I tried it. And another thing I found out, all them years that I was trying this thing called recovery and I kept relapsing, when I saw my medical doctor, I found out that I suffered from major depression. See, I didn't know that. Because it says in the literature that some of us may have to get some outside help. So when I found out that I was stuck in the cycle of depression, it finally dawned on me, y'all, that it made sense. Because, see, I would get clean, and I would stay clean for like 2 years, man. I mean, I would be working on that third year, and I would get depressed, and I would go into a hole that I couldn't get out of, and the only thing that I knew to do was to use. Because I couldn't deal with the pain. There you go, y'all. Woo. He always shows up on time. And so they put me on medication. And my life started getting better. And one day at a time, I started staying clean. And I started feeling better about myself. And then I started having hope. And then I started wanting to live. But I still had to deal with what everybody else was going to think about me. Because, see, that's another thing that I suffer with. I worry about what you guys think about me because I got an image. See, because I want everybody to like me. And it's real hard when you feel like you can't be yourself because other people may not accept you. See, I didn't know nothing about unconditional love until I came into this program. And one of the things that I'm realizing is that when I was a kid, see, I come from a military family, and I would like to blame somebody for the way I turned out, but you know, I didn't come from no dysfunctional family. I had a mother and a father. And my father, he was there as much as he could, but he worked a lot. And my mother, she was a woman that always took care of me. I always had the pigtails and the ponytails, and I always had clean clothes and stuff. But she liked to scream a lot. So I grew up very timid, shy, scared, and I felt alone a lot of times. And I always felt like I just didn't quite fit in. It didn't matter what it was. Something was just so different about me. And I wanted to be like y'all. I wanted to be anything other than me. When I went to school, they used to tease me. Because, you know, I'm kind of tall. I'm 5'11". And I was always the tallest one in my class. I was bony. And they had this little cartoon show called Popeye. And I got tired of them calling me Olive Oil. And I was dark, so they used to call me Spooky, Blackie. And so, you know, that kind of defined who I was. I thought I was ugly. I was scared. And I felt alone. And I lived my life just like that. And then I had trust issues. So I didn't let people in. And when I took my first drug, which was alcohol, something happened. That scared little girl went away. And this other girl appeared, and she was the life of the party. And I wasn't scared anymore. But what happened with that was, I developed this anger like you wouldn't believe. And so when I felt those feelings of being scared and intimidated, then I would mask it with the anger. You know, like, I was bad like that. And I did this for the whole entire time that I was in active addiction. And because of my size, didn't too many people pick on me anymore. And that's what I liked. I didn't want you picking on me anymore. So when I came into the program, my sponsor said that I had to let go of the image. And I was like, nah, I can't let that go because, see, that's my defense mechanism. That backs you up off of me. I didn't want you to get to know me anyway because if you did, you might not like me. And see, I got this big heart, right? And a lot of times when people see this big heart, I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. And I become vulnerable. And when I become vulnerable, I feel weak. See, it's about feelings with me. And I don't know how to deal with feelings. And my sponsor tells me that it's okay to feel, baby. But what you trying to do about it? Whew. Oh, God, Jesus. And I just got tired of being in pain, y'all. So I started working some steps. And I started with step one. And I realized that I was powerless over people, places, and things. Because, see, once I put the drug down, y'all was stuck with me. I was stuck with all that stuff, all that baggage. All those character defects. You know, the ones I didn't want y'all to see. And I started trying to do some step work, but it was only because I was pushed up against the wall and the pain became so great. And it was either grow or go, Gloria. And I got tired of going because I done went about 10 times. And when I came out of the hospital this time, I said, I'm not going back. I'm just not going back this time. I'd rather die first, y'all. See, a lot of people say that they got a fear, a healthy fear of this disease. Well, me, I respect this motherfucker because it kicked my ass. I respect it enough to leave it alone. It's not my friend. And, you know, one of the things that I'm learning is that I had to get a God of my understanding in my life. Because you know what? I got an awesome God, y'all. And I got a humorous God, too. Because I stopped taking myself so damn serious. And sometimes I even find myself laughing at myself. Some of the shit that comes out of this brain of mine. Y'all wouldn't believe me. Y'all don't know nothing about that. I mean, I could come up with some stuff, yo. You don't like me? What's she looking at? Why they keep staring at me? But anyway, I wanted a closer relationship with this God of my understanding because, you know, I always had this God that belonged to my grandmother. See, my grandmother, my mother, and my father, and all them prayed me up in here. You know, but I needed a God of my understanding because the God that I pictured in my mind was, okay, let me just say this. My mother comes from a holiness church. They don't even wear makeup, y'all. And they don't wear dresses above their knees. So I had to come up with a better God than that because, see, all the mess that I did, oh, man, I was in trouble. So my sponsor told me that I could have a God of my understanding, you know, and I wanted a loving God that, in spite of me, he was going to love me regardless. She was going to love me. Because, see, I don't believe that my God has a gender. You know, she is too powerful for that. Can't be defined. And I created this loving God that would love me and carry me through hard times and would get in my crap when I did some stuff I ain't had no business doing and just, you know, say, all right, and have some mercy. I mean, it's only through mercy and grace that I stand here. And I try to carry the message of hope because this program saved my life. You people were there when I cried and complained and bitched and moaned. And today what I'm trying to do, y'all, is I'm trying to stop. Just stay out my head. You know, I'm not running nothing. I'm not God Jr. I'm just trying to live one day at a time clean and sober. And a lot of times I suffer with control issues because I want things to turn out just right. I mean, I got it pinpointed right down to the wire. And when that don't turn out right, man, it's chaotic for me. That's called control. And I'm just trying to learn what powerless truly means, what surrender means, you know, and not just because I'm in pain. You know, I'm tired of pain being my motivator to change. You know, I have a conscience today. Things don't feel right. The shit that I did back then doesn't feel right today, y'all. You know, it's not okay to hurt another human being. That's not okay today. You know, I'm trying to be a loving creature today. You know, I came to this convention, and this is how it started off for me. I'm driving down 50, and I'm cruising. I'm talking to my girls. We got the music going, and I hit a speed zone of 35, and I'm coasting at 55. And all of a sudden, I see these, like, Christmas lights behind me. And I'm like, oh, shit, what did I do? I pull over, and the young guy, he's like, hey, how you doing? Can I see your license and registration? I was like, officer, did I do something wrong? Because, see, I still got a phobia about cops, right? Because I ran from them enough. So whenever I see one get too close to me, I start breaking out in sweat and stuff, you know, checking underneath the seats and shit. And he was like, you know, you was doing 55 and a 35, but I'm just going to give you a warning. I'm like, thank you, God. And he's like, y'all going down to Ocean City? I said, yes, we are. Are you a friend of Bill's? No. I'm just playing. But anyway, so then we get here, and, you know, just things just started happening that I had no control over. And things weren't turning out just right like I wanted them to. I had to deal with some things. And they were very painful. And one of the things that is the core of my disease is my self-centeredness. But what I try to do is I try to help another human being. And I saw some things this weekend that broke my heart. You know, and I just like to say that, you know, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be angry anymore. You know, I want to recognize that it's not about me. It's not about me, y'all. The world does not revolve around Gloria. If I do something, do it from the heart and let it be done. Let it go. It's not mine anymore. And if they don't accept it, like I think they should, then that's their choice. My New Year's resolution for 04 was leave mofos right where they at. Because, see, I like to carry your feelings with me, too, you know? You know, you talk about let go and let God. See, when you get upset, I get upset. They call that codependency. See, I don't want you to hurt because then I start hurting. Now, what's that all about? I got enough feelings of my own to carry. I can't even handle them. So I'm learning that if you choose to be angry, that's your choice. My sponsor tell me I can start my day over any point in time that I want to start it over, y'all. And I don't want to be angry anymore. Life is too short for that. I got the gift of recovery. I didn't come up in here to be miserable. I'm sorry. If you want to be miserable, do it over there. Because I'm about to have some fun up in this thing, y'all. If I got to be clean and sober, I can still party a little bit. I just got to do it clean and sober. And you know what? I have more fun doing it that way. You know, I bought me a motorcycle about 3 years ago. Yeah. Talking about some freedom. You know, I used to see them ride past me all the time, and I used to always say, dang, I wish I could get me one of them. But one of the things I noticed about my higher power, everything that I ask my higher power for, I pray for, y'all, I got. Now, that's bad, too. If you ask for some patience, oh, my God. If you ask for some humility, oh, my God. He sent everybody that a personality that I couldn't deal with in my life. So I learned some patience. But anyway, I got this motorcycle, and I created this club, and it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. And y'all, I've been struggling with that thing because the club went on without me. And I had to let that go. And I thought I let it go, but it keeps creeping back up. And my sponsor tells me that it's going to keep coming back until I deal with it. And I'm here to say that I'm tired. I'm tired, y'all. I'm tired of dealing with the same pain over and over again, expecting different results. You know, I want to learn what it's like to really let something go, to place it at my higher power's feet and be done with it. I don't know if I said anything here today, but what I do know is that I'm a young lady with no roots. I was born in France. I grew up in Texas, and I was raised in Florida. You figure that one out. So I don't know anything about being, you know, having a neighborhood that you grew up in, because every 3 years we was up and moving. I'm the only girl in my family. I'm the only one. So I don't know anything about sisterhood, you know. All I know is that I needed some women in my life to know what it was like to have that sisterly love, to have that bond. And my higher power blessed me with my sponsor family. And I just like to tell my sponsor that I love you. I love you because you showed me the meaning of unconditional love, yo. And I don't know how I would do this thing or how I would walk this journey without you. And I thank God for you every day. I really do, you know. And I have another lady in my life, my partner. And y'all, Lord have mercy, I put this woman through so much. And she has stuck in there with me time and time again. One more time, unconditional love. See, I don't know nothing about that because I never had it. Or if I did, I didn't recognize it. So I just want to just thank the committee for asking me to, you know, speak. And I want to thank y'all for showing up for me. And I love this program, y'all. This is the best thing since sliced bread. Thanks for allowing me to share. My name is Gloria.
All right, Gloria. Our second speaker is Willie Ave from the Liberty Group in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. Boy, I tell you, how similar we are, huh? Gloria told you everything about me. She did it so elegantly, too. I said, you had to do it so good, huh? But I know I saw Louise. There she is. Somebody from Pittsburgh better show up here. I went to all their things. But, this is great, man. I'm thinking, doggone it, man. The last meeting at a convention at 6 in the morning. Boy, but you know what? I'm a morning person, so it couldn't have been any better. Boy, this gift of recovery is fantastic, isn't it? And the glow sure is on all your faces. I can see it, and that's my gift. And, we all have our own higher powers here, and I sure got mine. And, where I'm at now, my recovery, I was born in 55. My higher power gave me my life in 55. My breath, my first breath. I was about 10 years old when I started losing it. And, you know, 1994 is when I started gaining it back. And, some people call her higher power Jesus, and some call him Allah. You know, it's positive, negative, good, bad, light, dark. Any way you want to put it, it all comes out the same. I'll speak about positive and negative since this is a program, a spiritual program and not a religious program. And as far back as I can remember, I was always a happy kid. I always remember smiling and having a good time. I got a family of 8, 5 sisters and 2 brothers. You know how that could be. And that was wonderful. But, somewhere along the line there, without blaming it on somebody, I remember this gift. I played a lot of sports and a lot of ball, and I just had so much fun. And I lived in the heart of the city in Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden, man, they come up with these inhalants. And that was the thing for us young guys in Pittsburgh. And it was a paintbrush cleaner. And we'd stick it on a rag, fire it in a bag, and huff it away. Man, what a feeling. Great. Great. I remember the first time I did it, I think I laughed for 15 minutes. I was losing my mind. That was the beginning. I lost my mind then. And I thought that was so wonderful. And, always hindsight here. Always hindsight, now that I can speak after thinking back on it. And that was the beginning. I started losing it. I didn't realize it then, but I started losing it. Thought I was getting something, and I was losing something. I was losing what was so freely given to me. And I almost died from that. I contracted a blood disease. They had to take my spleen out. I lost my platelet count, and I was bleeding to death for a couple years. Went in, got an operation. God didn't see fit to take my life. Oh, man, I thank that. I'm so glad I got an opportunity for this recovery. And I went into the hospital, and I lived. The chances were against me, but I lived. Got out of the hospital and went down and threw a rag, dipped it all up, threw it in a bag, and started all over again. After they just got done saving my life, I think maybe I might have been an addict. And I was about 14 years old then. It removed my spleen. 13 stitches, isn't that ironic? 13's lucky for me. And I lost a lot, man, with hindsight. I lost a lot. Still had the smiles, though. Didn't lose it all. And got off of that. That was a young boy's disease. I got off of that, and I found LSD and marijuana. We loved that LSD. We ate it as much as we could, anytime we could. And that went on for a few years. And I lost a little bit more of my personality, a little bit more of what was freely given to me. And I got through that stage alive. Up in Pittsburgh, they had a lot of people that robbed drugstores a lot. It was a drugstore era when I was young. And so when I hit high school, it was like a smorgasbord of drugs. It was like the Percocet. Well, that was Indo 122 back then. The Sopers, the Ludens, the Preludens, the Chewinols, you know, the slobber high. And I remember the boys from Garfield robbed a drugstore, and they took these Nols that were more powerful than the usual ones. And I went to a high school called Peabody in the heart of the city, 26 kids OD, and I was one of them. They were scooping us up, luckily. I'd have been dead. I had a couple more coming. I was so crazy and so sick, I went up and told the police. At that time, you remember the word pigs? I said, there ain't no pigs allowed on my campus. They said, he's sick. Boom, into the back of the van I went. And I thank God I went there. I fought the whole way while they were saving my life. I fought them. I had a couple more coming. I would have went to the park and died. Up in Pittsburgh, we don't have this kind of a view. We got mountains and trees and parks. It's beautiful, just as beautiful. And, you know, I lost a part. I lost some more of what was freely given to me. That process, but it was a degrading process. I went down. I went to the negative. I chose the negative side. I thought it was positive. You know, like Gloria, I needed to fit in. I was everything that she said, and I needed to, and that was the only way I knew how to do something about it, to change it, to get out of me and get into somebody else, and to fit in, that misfit shit. And boy, there was a lot of misfits up there. I fit right in. In the heart of the city, there's a lot of misfits. I was homeless at an early age. We might have been able to call my family dysfunctional. But I don't blame nothing on them. A lot of the choices were mine. But being out there in the streets at a young age, very painful memories. But such a growth out of it. And I learned how to survive out there, man. You learn how to survive. It wasn't about selling dope to be a gangster. It was about selling dope to eat, get somewhere to sleep. Winter time, summer was okay out there, but winter was rough. I spent some lonely. I think the pain of the cold wasn't shit to compare to the pain of the loneliness of being alone. Oh, God, I was so alone. I was in so much pain. I can still feel it. It's right here. And I didn't know what to do, man. I was so fucked up. I did all that shit to myself. I used to laugh and play ball. I was good too, man. I still played some ball. That's what kept me connected. He could play some ball. We want him on his, on our team. So I fit in. At least I fit in there. God gave me that gift. And I fit in somewhere there. That, I think that saved me a lot. But I had lost it totally. I had totally lost myself at about 20 years old after high school. Alcohol wasn't my big thing, but of course I had to get into alcohol to fit in. And of course I had to be a blackout drunk, 6 beers, and forget about me. I didn't go to sleep. I blacked out and raised hell for 8 hours. Boy, I'm lucky I'm alive. I'm really lucky I'm alive. I went on for years. I went into codependent relationship, one codependent relationship after another codependent relationship because of the insecurities that I grew up with. From being out there and being abandoned. I know that now. I didn't know that then. I had some issues to take care of. I know that now. I'll be taking care of them till I'm dead. I'm sure. I know that now too. And but one of those codependent relationships started getting me clean. And I just had it, man. After I started about 10, I was about 28, and I was gone. My mind and my soul and my spirit and that smile was gone. And I even forgot how the hell to... That's what it sounded like, man. It was gone. I didn't know what to do, man. I didn't want to live that way no more. But I had a higher power, and I started praying. God, I looked up one day, and I remember saying, will this ever go away? Will I ever know what it feels like to not have this pain? I couldn't articulate what the pain was, but I know I felt it, and I wanted it to go away. And on my own, I tried to do this. I quit drinking alcohol, which was a devastating part of my addiction, along with the heroin and everything else. I did it all to get out of myself. And I got introduced to, for a few years with this girl. She kept going out on the weekends, and I stayed home. And I did Percocet and weed and that at the parties. And finally, I got away from this girl, and I got back on the street again. And the place I hung out was in the heart of the set. And I got me a real, real, real good addiction to methadone, the pills. And that took me to my knees. And I cold turkeyed off of that methadone, and I realized there was nothing left for me. I didn't know anybody that was clean and sober. All I knew was people that got high. I didn't know there was a clean and sober side to life. Truly. And guy that worked for me at the time went to the methadone program, and I said, man, listen, take me to one of them places where they're all standing out in front of them churches. I know they're not getting high. Common sense told me, my higher power, that positive side of my nature told me, I got to get over to do something positive with these people. I got to start hanging out with people who ain't getting high, because I couldn't do it on my own. So they took me into a meeting, and lo and behold, there was like half of the people in there I knew from the streets, hadn't seen for a while. And this great big dude, Red, come up and gave me a hug. You know, I'm whoa, whoa with this hug shit. You know how we do. And I said, okay. And then I just sat down real timidly, real scared. I sat down and I listened. And I had my bag of weed in my pocket that stayed with me. And because I was just going to try this. And I remember there was a discussion room up in the upper. There was some steps, and you went back, and I seen them go up there, and I said, I wonder where they're going. And I was wondering if I was allowed to go there. You know, who was allowed? Who didn't know the rules when you come in? Nobody knew the rules. And but I was allowed to go up there afterwards. He said, oh, yeah, you could have went up there. And, okay. So I liked what I heard. I did listen. I took the cotton out of my ears, and I listened. That was a Wednesday. A Friday night, I went back to a big meeting in Pittsburgh called the Root Group. And it was about 150, 200 people in this room. And there was some hardcore addicts, some hardcore junkies in there, man. I know. I seen them. I was from the heart of the street. I seen them. I know what they were about. I avoided them. I wanted to live, so I avoided them. You don't want to die out there. You knew where to go, what to do, and not what to do in order not to get killed. For real. But they were in there. And you know, for me, that was a role model. You know, you looked up to them kind of notorious people. And they were in there getting clean and sober and laughing and smiling. And, you know, they did clean time in there. And I got up and, man, they did that one day. I got up and there was 150, 200 people clapping and cheering. And I was scared to death. And I went up and got that key tag, man. And I'm so glad I did. Because I got through that first hump. I got over that first fear, that initial surrender. And I did something positive, man. I finally started on the positive side. I had gone into the negative side for so long, and it went so deep. I had a long journey out. Took a long time to get in. And a long journey out. And I know that now because I got some time now for hindsight. And that's when my journey began. My recovery. I started recovering what I lost. Whew. Piece by piece. I lost it piece by piece. I'm only gaining it piece by piece. And that big piece. That was a big piece. Getting that one day key tag. That was the biggest piece that I can remember to this time. And it began. And I was a little embarrassed, a little apprehensive. Of course, I second-guessed myself and everything I did and said, just like we all do. I remember there was this girl. She was rough. And I went to the first meeting after that. It was a newcomers meeting. And they was handing out in the readings. And she said, "Here, read this." And you know, I was proud. I said, "Motherfucker, you know, I just took it, you know, and I read it." But I wasn't real happy about the way she, read this thing. And, but you know what? The process was beginning. It was another positive thing, man. I picked the reading up and I broke another barrier. I was starting to let it out, speak. Something I didn't want to do. I was suffering humility. A different kind of a humility. The kind we didn't like as addicts. We'd rather do the degradation and all that big word stuff. I'm not good with it. But you know, that kind of humility, right? And I wasn't used to that positive humility. Never even heard of it. But that was another piece. And then my recovery, it was like I was so angry. There were people walking around smiling and being happy. And I truly, truly inside myself could not understand how you were happy because I was having such a hard time. Friday nights was the worst for me because all my friends were out getting high and my poor ass couldn't do it. Why do I have to be here and not be able to go out and get fucking wasted? And I was sad about that. And I felt sorry for myself for a lot of weekends, especially if the weekends were hard. And, but I was done, man. I wanted to stop feeling the way I was feeling, and I was learning things through the process, this positive process I was going through. And, about 6 months into my recovery, 9 months, I'm not sure. I know when I crossed that invisible line as a kid, when we used to have a good time, go up to bleachers, play baseball, it was so fun. Let's go get something in us. We started getting high, and I crossed over an invisible line to where getting high, we can go have fun getting high, get something, and to where if it wasn't there, it wouldn't have been fun, you know, to where the addiction began. And all of a sudden, at that 9 months, man, I recrossed another invisible line. And I realized what one day at a time meant. And I realized, I'll tell you, a big thing about it was, such a relief, man. Because when I first got clean, I said, I'm doing a year, and if this don't work, I'm going back out. And I had every thought that I was going back out, because I had no idea what the process was going to do to me. And I realized what one day at a time meant. It was another big part of the puzzle for me, another big thing. And it was a spiritual moment for me, because I realized, just maybe, I can do this. That I don't have to get high anymore. And that, you know what, this thing that I took on might work. And, oh, man, I seen a teeny-weeny light at the tunnel, and I says, oh, my God, this can happen. I'll never forget that moment. It was at right around 9 months. And I was sitting in a discussion meeting because my sponsor had told me, discussions is at the pits. That's where the real recovery is. You get in there and people are spilling their heart. You'll hear your story every time you go in there from one spirit. And I heard a kid, about 9 months, I heard a kid coming in at about 30 days doing the same thing that I did, bitching and moaning, and why is everybody so happy, and how are you so happy? And I remember, and it dawned on me, the process and how similar we all were. You know, that this kid was just like me, was saying the same things. And I realized then that when I heard somebody at 30 days, I knew my past. And I heard someone at 5 years, I seen my future. I seen the possibilities. I was starting to awaken a little bit in my spirit. And, man, what a journey, man. What a process, this process of recovery. You know, it's so nice to pay bills. And people think that that's something, but what a gift to get up there and pay bills. Because what it did was my insecurities of being in the streets and not having nowhere to live, and the codependency that I needed from other people that tore me down, the things I did. Because I couldn't do that. And now, it took me a long time, but I realize I could pay my bills now. It's okay. I'm getting security back. I'm getting a gift. What a gift it is to get up in the morning, to be clean and sober. I recovered enough of my personality and my life and the self-esteem that I'm getting by it. The spirituality of that is in something that simple. I used to come out and see this sunshine out of a club door at 7 o'clock in the morning. After all night long, that's the only time I seen that big orange ball in the sky. I was getting ready to go home. And I wasn't going to get it. And now, you know, I used to go up the reservoir. I used to love to be outside and I'd see that beautiful sunshine. And I'm ready to walk. I always loved the morning. I light that J up, man, and everything that went up. Oh, this is great. But you know what? An hour later, it wasn't so great. I was back down again. My spirit was gone. That little lift, that little boost that I got from that J, gone. In an hour, and the chase started. Now, I get up, I'm checking this big bad boy out, and it truly is just starting. It's only going to get a little better a little later. It depends on where I want to go with it. I got the choice now. I took the upper hand over this negative creature. I don't want him no more. I don't want this no more, man. I am going down there no more. I'm not letting them take me. You know, I'm not letting the creature in you take me. I can't do it because we all have it in us. It's in all of us, both sides. And it creeps up anytime and come and get you and wants to take your spirit from you. just as soon as it can. I know it wants to take mine all the time. You can articulate it in any way you want, but that beast wants me. And I don't want to give him back no more just for today. You know, I come out here, and I was thinking this morning, you know how we want to do a lead, and it don't work. So I was sitting there listening to Glory. I wasn't even trying to think about what I wanted to say and be so elegant and dramatic. She was doing a good job for me. But what did occur to me this morning when I was laying in that bed is when I thought about that, I thought about the negative side of that, because you know what? Ain't nobody got a hold on that, on the spirit, on the soul. It's infinite. This spirituality, this body that we're in, is so much different than what's inside the spirit and the soul. There's two different entities. We filled the body up. It's all that bullshit. We needed it, you know. You know that physical addiction we went through. As soon as I deprived my body from that, the spirit started growing. See, I started putting the stuff in the physical side of it, and everything was physical. I did it for years and years, and every time I swallowed something into my body, it took something away from my spirit. And just as soon as I stopped putting that stuff in my body, my spirit started growing, that sacrifice. I realized that it truly wasn't about my body. Body's just a housing for what's real, for what's really real, for what it's really all about. Not what you got on, them nice clothes and that gold. It's about how you feel laying in that bed when nobody else is there but you. And then you can't hide and lie from yourself, although denial is a very powerful thing. You know, if you want to lie to yourself, you can, but if you want to grow, you're not going to deny yourself the fact that it starts in the mirror. And I just thought, you know, you start thinking that way and you start thinking how spiritual you are, and you know what? You find out how spiritual you really ain't. You know, because you ain't got it. You're going to go to your deathbed. Infinite, see, is a big wide open space, man. I like just as far as you can see out in that sun and that stars and beyond. I used to think, man, I got this down. Boy, was I depriving myself of something. I got this down. You got something down that never ends. Where's the beginning? Where's the end? There ain't none. And it's right before your very eyes. I love them beautiful nights and the stars now where I can open my spirit up, look up, and see where it never ends. Where's it end? And I shut my eyes and I look inside and I see the same thing. We're so much a part of what this higher power gave us. We truly are. And it wasn't about what I stuck in my body. It wasn't about the body. It was about the soul, the spirit. It was about depriving myself all those years of what was so given to me freely. Freely. And that I gave it back piece by piece. And I'm getting it back piece by piece. I'm growing so much. I'm learning so much about myself and how much work I really do have. And I'm so glad that I have that much work to do, because I'd get awful bored if I didn't have it. I'd get awful bored if there wasn't something to look forward to today. Because I already got it all. I don't need nothing. I might as well just go home and get in the hole. Because I don't need nothing else. I got it all, right? But you know what? It's funny how sometimes we go there. We think that, at least I did. And I see it with a lot of people that I talk about. You know, the guys I rode down here with, we got a 7-8 hour drive. We were talking about this couple guys that are just new, coming in, and newcomers. And, you know, the insecurities that we grow up with, especially men, you know. And women nowadays, but I don't know about women. I know about men and how we feel inside. And we have kids. We all have kids. And I said, man, you know, you just keep coming. And you're going to get this. It's not something that you can go choose to get. It chooses you. It depends on how open you want to be, is how open you're going to get. You know, You want to think you got it all in that little box? Well, that's all you get, is that little box. And where we're at now, you got it. And where we're at now is just clean time don't equal recovery, but try to recover without it. You ain't doing it. Go ahead and try to recover in a year. Or go ahead and do them 12 steps in a year. You'll be doing them over again next year because we're doing them. And but I said, guys, listen, man, it's about paying the bills. It's about responsibility, going to work. And guess what? The spirit grows. You get the gifts from that. You don't know you're getting the gifts, but you're getting the gift. You're getting the gift of life. See, we got an hour at the meeting, and you got 23 hours without the meeting. And what's important, more important, 23 hours without the meeting. And if you keep coming and you keep getting your time, and now at this time in my life, I'm just realizing so many, many, many things now. I'm so glad. And this is coming into 10 years later. So what it just tells me is, and I didn't try to get this. I didn't say this is what I'm going to get. I just kept going every day, not picking something up. And that life that was given to me, this process of recovery, I've recovered so much back and that I lost. I'm getting my emotions together now. I'm still a little jammed up and dwarfed, but my emotions are starting to form to where I'm starting to deal with some of them emotions, man. I'm starting to deal with a lot of that pain and them insecurities. And without staying clean and sober, I wouldn't have been able to do that, man. Without starting to go to work and pay the bills, I wouldn't have known what it felt like because I wouldn't have had no damn esteem. I'd still be running around depending on somebody else to take care of me instead of me taking care of me. And by being able to do that, I've been able to give so much back, give so much out. And the love in these rooms and the sharing love and the depth of the love. And look at all these spirits sitting here, man. Spiritual program. Everybody has their own spirit. Trust me. When we're in them meetings, man, I get something from somebody. There's one person in there. There's one spirit in there that connects with mine. Out of 100, I tell you what, I'm going to catch one of them. And that's going to do me some good. And that's it's well worth me getting up that morning, thanking my higher power, jumping onto the positive side of life, and digging it just a little bit further out of that hole. And I want to thank these people from this convention up here for letting me speak to you. And I gave you a little bit of what we do up here in Pittsburgh. If you're ever up there, man, there's a ton of meetings up there. Come on up. Bring your spirit. And we'll give you a big hug and a lot of love. And you always have a place to eat and stay. I'm sure of that, man. Because we know what it's like not to have that. Thanks, guys.